In this rock capsule, Dave Gilmour of Pink Floyd tells us about his new solo album. This is John Thompson in London. Money. From the album Dark Side of the Moon, the music of Pink Floyd. One of this famous band's members, Dave Gilmour, has just released a solo LP, and he's been talking to Richard Skinner, who asked why the musician had waited so many years before putting out an album of his own work.
Oh, there's all sorts of reasons for that. I'm very lazy, for one thing. Until about 3 years ago, we never really could have had the time to set on a project like that. We did work extremely hard for quite a lot of years before we decided that we ought to take a little time off as well from time to time.
And rediscover yourselves.
Yes. Mm. And so about 3 years ago, I realised I had the time to do it, but I was very lazy. And my family and friends all started hustling me recently, last year, when I did have some time off, and said, come on, get it together. So we did.
Do you need to be hustled?
Yes. I think so. I mean, I think I would have got round to it anyway, but hustling certainly helped.
Musically, how does this album, do you feel, relate to what you do with Floyd? I'm thinking purely on the musical context at the moment.
I don't think it's terribly far away from the Floyd. I mean, I didn't try to make it like the Floyd or different to the Floyd, but it was quicker and maybe less thought about. I didn't spend so much time worrying about how to fit all the pieces together and whether they'd all sound good together and turn it into one overall thing. I just went in without any great amount of thought, and we just banged about in the studio till we came up with the right sort of ideas and carried on from there.
Part of the track Crying in the Street from the new solo album called David Gilmour. Richard Skinner asked Dave how many people had worked on making the LP.
There's me. I wrote it all more or less, apart from one song and two of the lyrics. And I produced it. And the other two guys are a bass player and drummer, who did help me a lot in it. But as far as I'm concerned, it's all my own work, more or less.
Did you find it hard to produce your own things in the sense that you were really terribly close to what you were doing?
No, I didn't find it hard. I mean, I'm quite used to doing that sort of thing. We do it all the time with Pink Floyd, too.
Yeah, but there are four of you.
Yes, there are four of us, quite. But, I mean, no, I didn't find it hard, but I don't know whether the result could have been better achieved if someone else... I mean, I don't know what the result of it is exactly. I mean, I think it's turned out pretty successfully, as far as I'm concerned, but I don't know if it could have turned out better if someone else had been there, being the other opinion, the detached opinion.
Let's get out of the hypotheticals, then. Mm. You must have had a set idea in your mind when you got into the studio to do it.
No, I didn't. I didn't have a set idea at all. I had a few bits and pieces of music that weren't complete, and one song, I think, that was fairly near complete. And I more or less just went in with myself and the two other guys, and we banged about the ideas. We recorded them once, and then I went home with them all and sat around for a while longer, thinking about them, changing them, writing new bits. Then we did the same thing again, did them again. Then I went home again. And that was the point when I actually decided, right, I'm actually going to make this album. And then I booked a studio in France and shot off down there to do it. And I'm coming with my own name. Is this a dream? Or is it real life? Oh, sweet.
That song's called So Far Away, and it's one of the tracks on David Gilmour's solo album. David has been putting some time and money into something besides his work with the Floyd and his solo project.
With this solo album obviously taking up a lot of your time for a few months, and then potentially a new Pink Floyd album coming up, do you ever get tempted to get more involved in that sort of production seat outside of the Pink Floyd or Dave Gilmour area?
Not really, no. I have done a bit of that in the past, but it's not really what I want to do. I mean, I've done it a few times just for fun, learn a bit about it. And I do enjoy it when I do it, but it's not something I'd like to do all the time. It's terribly, terribly hard work.
Forgive me if I'm totally wrong, were you involved with Kate Bush?
Yes.
Right, now.
To a certain extent. Only very, I mean, I didn't actually do any of the physical hard slog of producing her.
But you did produce some of the tracks on the album.
Executive produces, how it's written down. That means that I funded it, basically.
All right.
I did do quite a bit of work with her right at the beginning when I first met her, about 4 years ago, I should think, recording her at home on a Revox. And then I sifted through about 40 or 50 songs that she had, enormous quantities of them, and with another guy, and we worked on which tracks we liked the best, and took them up into a studio. I got a guy to arrange it and produce it, do the physical graft of it, as I was a bit tied up at the time. Anyway, I can't write string arrangements. And stuck it in there, came out with 3 very good tracks, and handed it on to EMI.
What would you say is Kate's potential? Do you think she's got a...
Yeah, I think she's got an enormous potential. I think the first single, Wuthering Heights, shows one side of her. I've hustled very heavily to get the second single released, that's just been released, The Man with the Child in His Eyes, because that's one of the ones I picked out and recorded with her.
Maybe he doesn't love me, I just took a trip on my love for him.
Man with the Child in His Eyes, and that's a hit single in Britain for Kate Bush, a Dave Gilmour protégé. Richard Skinner asked him if he enjoyed working as a solo artist.
I don't really see myself as becoming a permanent solo artist, unless the others kick me out. It's not really my intention to become that permanently.
No. How does it relate, then, to your work with Floyd at the moment? Because, as you say, there are further commitments coming up very, very, very soon.
Well, it's a part-time thing. It's something to keep me happy while everyone else is doing whatever keeps them happy.
When you all get different things to do, do you think that adds to the strength of the group overall? Or
I think it should do, yes.
Couldn't it undermine it as well?
I guess it could do, but and it's really down to the other people. I mean, it's down to the individual people involved. And it's certainly not undermining it from my point of view. I mean, you might think it is because I'm taking a stance of doing something different, or on my own, and you might think that that was undermining the overall value of the thing itself, but I don't think so.
Okay, so what are your immediate plans, as they say?
Mine, or yes. The Pink Floyd's?
Well, either, and both.
Mine is to take a holiday, first of all. First
That's after you walk out of this door, is
it? Within a couple of weeks, yes. I've got a bit more promoing to do. And yes, take a holiday for a couple of months, and then I hope we can all come back and start working on a Pink Floyd record.
Mm.
But as we haven't talked about it yet...
It's in the Lamb of the Gods. Yes.
Yes.
Show your quality.
from David Gilmour's solo album, part of a track called Short and Sweet, which Dave co-wrote with Roy Harper. The outrageous San Francisco group The Tubes had to curtail their sellout British tour when lead singer Fee Waybill broke a leg while leaping from the stage. But before the group left London, Bob Kilby of BBC Rockline asked Waybill if The Tubes conducted talent contests to find some of the weird people who have appeared with them in concert.
We've had talent hunts in the past. We found some great people. I mean, Dave the 8 foot tall Uncle Sam. He had these great stilts that made him about 8 foot tall, and he would dress like Uncle Sam. And you always see him in the United States, you always see him at baseball games. Such big, such greats as the Chicken Killers. That was a horrible. We had a talent contest once, and we had these crazed guys all dressed in bondage trying to make an impression on us. You know, we said weirdos only. We didn't go for guys playing acoustic guitar, you know. Anyway, these two guys came. They had a black silk bag, right, with this thing rustling around in it. And so we just went, oh boy, these guys are out there. Here's another pair of kooks, you know. And so what they did, this weird bondage dance. One guy gets down on his knees, right? The other guy opens the bag, and he's got a chicken in it, a white chicken. He grabs the chicken by the head and swings it around, hands it to the other guy, and the guy bites its head off. I just flipped out. God.
I shouldn't think the chicken was too pleased.
No, the chicken didn't dig it. But it totally stunned everybody in the audience. Here we had this huge audience of 200-300 people at a little club in town, and the press was there, and the TV station was there, and this guy bites a chicken's head off. Oh, I couldn't believe it. We kicked him out immediately. I mean, people wanted to beat him up, you know, but it was terrible. They didn't get a gig. We kicked them right out.
White Punks on Dope, recorded live on the last Tubes tour of Britain. This is John Thompson in London calling in Andy Finney on the BBC Rockline.
The live sound of Thin Lizzy from their new double album, Live and Dangerous. In a moment, John Peel talks to Lizzy's leader, Irishman Phil Lynott. But first, some dancing in the moonlight.
But I asked you for a dance. Now we go steady to the pictures. I always get chocolate stains on my pants. And my father is going crazy. Says I'm living in a trance. But I'm dancing in the moonlight. It's got me in its spotlight. It's alright dancing in the moonlight. On this long hot summer night.
Some of these things were recorded a couple of years ago. I mean, it's obviously taken you a while to put this album together.
Yes, it's about 3 years. I mean, the build-up for the Hammersmith one, and that was done in 76, the 3 dates we did at Hammersmith. And we went through 6 nights, some in America, some in Toronto and Canada, and the Hammersmith ones. And we finally decided on the Hammersmith ones and the Toronto ones. And we whittled them down to what we have. We went for, the most amount of numbers we could put on the album, which was 17. And on the flip side of the single, we stuck an extra one as well. So, they're not buying the album all the time. And then the ones in Toronto were recorded on the Bad Reputation tour in 77. And, that finished just at the end of 77. And we spent the first quarter of this year putting it together, the album. So it took about 3 years and then.
Guess who just got back today? Now while that voice did a bit away, haven't changed, had much to say. Man, I still think them cats are fresh. They were asking if you were around, how you was, where you could be found. Told them you make you living downtown, driving all the old and places. The boys are back in town.
The boys are back in town.
I said the boys are back in town.
The boys are back in town, Thin Lizzy from their album Live and Dangerous. There are rumours that Peter Frampton's world tour, which starts in the fall, may be his last. Peter, now working on his starring role in Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, has just signed a contract with the Orion Pictures Company to star in two more big-budget films, the first to go into production in 1979. It's obvious that Frampton has now become a hot property in the film world, so that future touring will have to be kept to a minimum, if he goes on the road at all. Details of the world tour itinerary have not yet been announced, apart from North American dates early next year. This is John Thompson in London, and our guest musician is Phil Lynott of Thin Lizzy. On the BBC Rockline, he's been discussing Lizzy's new live album with John Peel.
Most people would say that there are really two attitudes to be taken to a live LP. It either shows that a band's running out of ideas or that it's the end of one phase in a band's development.
That's the one for us.
It's a souvenir of what you've been doing. But you're not having any trouble at all in writing new
music. No, I've got to say. In fact, the live album has given us a chance to catch up because we were always writing for an album. Mm-hmm. Now we've written a lot of songs and that, you know, we haven't put them down yet, so we're actually starting up songs because we're still writing at the same output, but like this live album containing so many songs that we've already recorded has saved us, you know. So the next album, which we hope to get out, recorded album by the end of the year, should have a lot of exciting new songs, and I should be able to get out something of my solo stuff, you know.
When you say we are writing, I mean, does this mean that all the band are writing?
Yeah, everybody's writing like mad now, you know.
And is the lineup of the band fine? I mean, Brian's settled back down in and quite happy there,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it's all happy again. Yeah. Probably break up tomorrow.
This is one we're going to try and get to moving on, this one. It's a number recorded by Bob Seger. A number called Rosalie.
Thin Lizzy's latest single, also taken from the Live and Dangerous album, Rosalie.
Andy Finney on the BBC Rockline. Former Genesis guitarist Steve Hackett has released a solo album called Please Don't Touch. He had made a previous solo LP while still with Genesis. Clive Williamson asked Steve why, since he had the freedom to make his own albums as a member of the group, he found it necessary to leave.
Oh, well, I didn't have the freedom. That's just it. I didn't have the freedom. It's a misconception. I had the freedom to do the first one, but it was an unpopular move to some degree. Let's put it that way. So it wasn't as free as it could have been. I mean, I wanted to do a second solo album, and I didn't feel as though I had the sympathy of the world, you know, in order to be able to do it. There was a lot of arguing in the band going on at that time. You know, I argued my right to do it. I argued that Phil was being allowed not only to do separate albums, but he had his own separate band, which was being managed by the same management, etc. And all I was asking was the right to be able to make sure that my material was being recorded. So there was no guarantee of that within the confines of Genesis. I think the thing which twisted it for me was funny thinking that the songs that I was working on, I mean, were actually the strongest things I'd ever done, and to make sure that they were recorded, you know, it was gonna, I knew that if I took it into the, you know, the group rehearsal situation, that everything would be dissected and I'd end up with co-credits, we'd end up, you know, dividing songs and sticking them together, etc. And I really felt that artistically, I mean, especially recently with, you know, my involvements with the band, that those things hadn't been that successful.
Part of the title track from Steve Hackett's new album, Please Don't Touch. Clive Williamson asked Steve how he chose the title.
Well, basically, I wanted to have a simple title after the first album, which had a thing called an acolyte on it. And people say, what's an acolyte? Voyage of the Acolyte. So I thought, okay, I'm not going to fool anybody. It's going to be called Please Don't Touch. And it's going to be tied in with the cover. You know, very porcelain, doll-like quality to the cover. Almost like a carriage clock, or just anything that you might see in a shop. Which, I mean, how many times have you seen a sign, "Please don't touch," kind of thing? And basically, it ties in with the cover, whereby you would imagine that the two people in the foreground had touched the toys, and now the toys were running amok and were playing with them, as opposed to the other way around. Mm.
The cover has a very fairground quality, doesn't it?
Yes,
which
it does.
Reflected, obviously, in the music.
Yeah. I went out looking for fairgrounds with microphones and things, and found very few of them, funnily enough. But I recorded on Santa Monica Pier, which has a fairground in Los Angeles. We recorded in the same place that they actually shot a film called The Sting. That's very interesting. I literally went round with a microphone an awful lot of the time, like being on location with a microphone. A bit like shooting a film as opposed to doing an album, really. It really felt like that, you know, getting people to play various parts in it.
Music of one-time Genesis player Steve Hackett from his new album, Please Don't Touch.